Okay. This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I'm so, look, I'm getting so confused. Sometimes I wear the mask when I'm ready to start the program. Sometimes, and today I forgot to put my earphones on. I mean, really? We're going crazy a little bit. Okay, well, this is Joy on Paper, and it is a joy to talk to my first guest today because I love his book. It's just amazing. Robert Dagoni. Hi, Robert. How are you?
I'm well.
Can you hear me? Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, you can hear me okay.
Okay, now I hear you. Great. Okay, what do you like to be called? Robert or Bob or Bobby or what?
Bob's fine. Bob's fine.
Okay, well, Bob. Oh, it's so... I always love to have a lawyer on. You know, there are so many of you who turn to writing, and you are always so good, but, you know, you particularly... I don't know. You are amazing. I know that somebody crowned you. I think you were crowned. I don't know if you had this ceremony and they actually gave you the crown, but I think you were crowned the king of legal thrillers. So
yeah, that was a while ago.
Yeah, that was a while ago. So now we're going to have a new ceremony. We're going to have to find a castle somewhere. We're going to find somebody to crown you the king of spy thrillers. My goodness gracious. This is such a book.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It was a lot of fun to write.
Well, and a lot of fun to read. It is just so good. And I needed it. I really needed a fun, you know. Like I'm saying, here I am sitting here. I mean, is this crazy or not? I'm sitting here ready to start the program. And I'm wondering, there's something missing. Well, last week I started the program and I still had the mask on. I still had the crazy mask on. And I'm wondering, gee, I sound funny. And today I'm sitting here and, you know, and there's earphones all over the place and I didn't put any on. I'm like, I think we're starting to get, we're starting to lose it a little bit, right?
Well, it's all the crazy stuff going on in our life at the moment with the COVID and everything else. It's just, everything's out of whack a little bit.
A little bit. For 2 months, I was broadcasting from my kitchen next to my very nice Whirlpool Whisper dishwasher. And I was so happy to get back in the studio. And, you know, it's just like normal, well, sort of normal, but because I can't have any guests yet. But it is. You know, just so much fun that I absolutely get to keep talking to my favorite authors. And you, well, there's just so many of your books that I've loved over the time. But this new one, it's exciting. And it brings
Thank
us back.
You.
You have to tell my audience about it. Because the funny thing is, we're back to Putin. We're back to Russia.
Yeah, we are.
We never finish.
We are. No, and I don't know if we will be for a long time.
Oh, but this is the second book in the series. Is it going to be more than one book, right? It's going to be more than two books?
There'll be a third.
There'll be a third.
So you're beyond that, we'll see.
So you're going to make a trilogy at least. That gives us hope for the future that we'll have something to read that's not pure dystopian. Because I really can't take any more real, serious dystopian where the world is ending with everyone diseased. So
yeah, no, those are tough.
Yes. So this one is just wonderful. And I want you, so why don't you lay it out? The new one is called The Last Agent, and it is the second in the series. So explain your hero. Explain the idea that you got, you know, here you are, a lawyer. Well, in the last book, at least we had some legal problems here for you to deal with. But tell us about this wonderful, wonderful new series.
So I actually brought Charles Jenkins into my books very, very early when I was writing legal thrillers. He was he became David Sloan's private investigator. And Charlie is actually based on a friend of mine who's not a CIA agent, or he went to law school with me. And so he's an African-American man. He's 6'5". He's 230 pounds. And he joined the CIA after getting out of the Vietnam War and went to work basically in Mexico City, where they have the largest Russian embassy there, and dodged and played games with the KGB until he got sort of dissatisfied and disillusioned, and he left. And 40 years later, he was on his farm in an isolated area up in, called Camino Island here in Washington State. And a man shows up, and it's his former CIA station chief in Mexico City. And he gets dragged back into Vietnam, or excuse me, dragged back into the CIA, and he heads to Moscow under false pretenses, and he finds himself on a run for his life. He makes it home, and the second book opens with Jenkins back at home after he's gone through an espionage trial and all kinds of things, and he's very disillusioned, even more disillusioned and unhappy, and a young CIA officer shows up at his door and tells him that they're trying to find an agent in Moscow who has disappeared. And Jenkins learns the name of the woman is Paulina Ponomanova, who's the same woman who basically saved him. If it wasn't for her, he would not have made it back the first time.
And that is from book that was from the first book, the Eighth Sister.
Correct. So he's got to go back to first find out whether it's her, and if it is her, to somehow get her out of Lefortovo prison, which is the political prison in Moscow where they send all the dissidents and everyone else, and people are not heard from ever again. And he's got to get her out. So that's the big problem is get her out of the prison, and then if it's her, get her out of the country. And really, you know, it's a chase book, and that's why it was so much fun to write, because you know, it was everything that I all my friends that are good at bush planes and snowmobiles and all that stuff. So it was a lot of fun to write, and I really had a good time doing it.
Well, it reads so beautifully. And now Charles Jenkins, I mean, he's in this second book, he's home. He and his wife have one son, and they've had a new baby. And part of us, you know, in a little bit, I suppose, in the thinks, oh, gee, it would be nice if he could have a nice, quiet life. But we know, as a reader, we're not going to settle for that. We're going to settle for, his wife, who's also in the CIA, says, okay, well, more or less, go for it. And we're thinking,
well, she realizes that's just not who he is.
Yeah.
You know, it's not who he is. And, you know, I agree with you, though. I mean, there's some convincing that has to be done there, as happens in all relationships. It's like you said, if you do it well enough, you hope that the reader suspends their disbelief and just goes along for the ride, really, and enjoys the ride.
And a heck of a ride it is. We go from one, it's almost, you know, it's when we talk about a read that's sort of breathless, where we don't have time to take a breath, and that's sort of what happens with this book, because he's we know he's going to get back into Moscow, we know he's going to do these things, we don't know how, and that's the exciting thing. We don't know how is he going to figure out all this, and he's up and working now with somebody who we didn't like in the first book.
Right, right. And that, you know, that's kind of the fun part of the book, Joy. I don't know how he's going to get out. I mean, I'm not an outliner. I'm an organic writer, and so my job is just to get him there and then get him out. There were some days where I literally sat and stared at the computer for a long time, trying to figure out, okay, you put him in this mess, now how the heck are you going to get him out of it? And I had some days where there wasn't a lot of writing going on, because I first had to figure out, you know, how am I going to do this? How am I going to get it right? And I think you know, readers really love Viktor Fedorov, the FSB officer in the first in the Eighth Sister, and you know, he was also wronged by his agency. So you know, Jenkins sees an opportunity there to try to seize it. And Fedorov is one of the best characters I think I've ever written, because I think he's very real. He's a man that, you know, was trying to do the right thing by his family, and he was trying to do everything he could in his job. And he basically, you know, he gets screwed the same way kind of Jenkins gets screwed. And so they're kind of two peas in a pod. And it was fun. It was really fun to have the opportunity to bring him back.
Well, that's why I call this program Joy on Paper, because it is such a joy when you have these characters. Heavens knows where these characters come in your head. I mean, it's really a miracle. It's they take over, and at some point they say, we're getting out of your brain and we're getting on paper. And that feeling that you must, I'm sure that you had when finally they let you know where they were going to go in this story.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think getting to the end of the first draft is always the best moment for me. Because it's a realization that I got it done. I accomplished what I wanted to do. Now I got to go back and I got to change things and rework things and do all that. But when I can get the plot to go from A to Z, that's a time to celebrate for me for sure.
Well, everything in this book, over the past few months, as I've been talking more and more to writers offline, where many have sort of come to me and said, well, you know, I start this program and my slogan, whatever, is a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And so many of them come to me and they say, you know, I've been dreaming of writing, and now starting somewhere around March or April, they started writing. Now they're coming to me and they say, well, you know, what am I doing wrong? How can I? And I tell them, you just have to let these stories flow. Don't start reading books on how to write. Some of them went immediately books how to write. That's not the way to do it. Let the characters take you where they want, right?
Yeah, you know, Stephen King calls it telepathy, and Diana Gabaldon of the Outlander series, she calls it magic. And really what they both say is the exact same thing. Stephen King, in his book on writing, he talks about, you know, how does an author sitting at her desk in a certain town touch the lives of readers who she's never going to meet, living in towns that she's never even going to visit? And he says it's telepathy. And you have to allow the characters on the page to sort of transcend time and space and touch people in their own way and on their own personal basis. But it's also a really scary thing to do, Joy. I mean, you know, I've written 20 novels now, I think, and it didn't come to me really until probably novel number 13 or 14, where I felt really comfortable with being in a place where I could, you know, sort of relax into a story and let the characters talk to me and tell me their story. And I'm basically transcribing it and putting it down on paper, because what you're doing is you're writing from the heart. And that can also be a really scary process, because, you know, when you write from the heart and you put a book out there that comes from your heart, it's painful when someone steps on it. So you have to kind of get past that feeling that, you know, I'm going to get hurt here. And you just have to realize I'm going to put the best book I can out there. And hopefully some people are going to tune into that wavelength that Stephen King talks about. And some people aren't, but that's not your fault. That's just the person just can't get on the same wavelength.
Well, you know, we knew you would be great on writing anything that has to do with the law and legal procedure, because your books have been, you know, along that line in many ways, and you're great. When did all of this spy stuff get into your life, and where do you do this research, and how many spies do you know now?
Well, it's interesting. The Ace Sister came to me fortuitously. Years ago, I had spoke with Kristen Hanna, who wrote The Nightingale. And The Nightingale was such a fabulous novel, I just had to find out where she got it. And she's the one who said to me, sometimes stories fall in her lap, so I just need to get out of the way. And really what happened with me is I met a gentleman through sort of a whole twist and turns of events, and I finally sat down to meet him. And he was a former Army intelligence officer who was tried for espionage. They believed that he had tried to sell secrets, and he had a whole story to tell, which was really bizarre and crazy. And, you know, the what happened to him wasn't sexy in today's day and age, you know, like you mentioned at the start of your show here. Russia is sexy again because of Putin, because of all the things going on. It's sort of a mafia state. And so it's really a rich tapestry for readers and writers to get into again, because there's so much there that just is so different than what we're used to. So when this gentleman started talking to me, I basically said to him, you know, I would like to write a book with one of my characters, Charles Jenkins. You know, would you be willing to help me with the espionage stuff? And he said he would. And, you know, then like always happens, you know, in the process of putting it together, I ran into another gentleman who actually worked for the Australian Secret Service over in Moscow. He was working for American Express in the Metropole Hotel. And I asked him, you know, hey, would you give me a hand? And he said, absolutely. And when the book came out, I had a third gentleman say to me, wow, you know, where did you get all this information? And I said, you know, would you be willing to help me? And he said, absolutely, you know. And so, you know, you kind of just follow the crumbs off the ground and to, you know, along the path, and you try to find where it's going to lead you. And there are just some very generous people out there that will, you know, help you with the stuff you don't know.
Well, you certainly found some good sources, because you're making this, it feels so realistic. I mean, it's all up-to-date stuff, and it's really exciting for the reader to learn, you know, a lot of this stuff as we're going along. And I kept saying, whoa, this is some great research, too.
Well, thanks. I mean, I love research. I really do. Probably comes from my legal background, but I really love to research. I love to learn about things and learn new things. You know, I'm in the process of starting the third in this series with Charles Jenkins, and you know, I'm reading a ton about what happened when Perestroika hit and how the Russian mafia, the four, took over for a long time, and then Putin comes into power and you know, there's a big battle for you know, who's gonna run the country, and it's really fascinating, and I really enjoy it, and I, you know, I'm kind of one of those anal retentive people that I take just binders full of notes in my stuff, and then I kind of choose what I need to move the story forward and rely on other people.
Well, I love research too. It's really one of those joys of being a writer. It's so funny, you know, when you think Russia, the Ukraine. I'm working on a book set in, you know, 1875, and
wow.
You know, it's a long haul, because I'm writing in between all of the other stuff I do. But the thing is, there, you know, the Ukraine. You think we're poor Franz Joseph thought he could, you know, get all these Balkan countries organized and
yeah.
You know, they'd all sort of, none of this would be going, and here we are, how many years later? We're still making, you know, peace treaties with Kosovo and this one and Ukraine and they all, it's all still so relevant. And I was thinking, oh, if we could bring Franz Joseph, he'd just like that. Well, you know... Maybe you guys should have listened to me, and I'd have cleared up this problem a long time ago.
It's an interesting part of the world, isn't it? I mean, you just wonder sometimes whether, you know, whether it will ever really get its act together. But when you start to read the history behind, you know, the Soviet Union and Russia, during Tsarist times and everything, what you begin to realize is, you know, for the longest time, it was just a battle for survival, because, you know, really all they had up there was oil. They didn't have a lot of other things, and so, you know, everything was sort of a battle, and they were constantly, it was a hard scrabble type of life, and in all those countries out there, you know, it was hard scrabble, and so, you know, that's sort of what continues to this day is, you know, the people were sort of ingrained with this understanding and belief that, you know, if you wanted something, you had to work really hard for it, and even if you did, there was no guarantee you were going to get it. It's really the history behind it is just fascinating.
It is.
You just wonder, don't you? I mean, you think, you know, are they ever gonna really kind of pull it all together?
I don't know. Maybe you'll pull it together in the third book, which I know your publishers are eager to get out as soon as this one, you know, hits the best selling list for a while, and then they'll say, where's Bob? Get this book out. We want it done. And you are such a fine writer. And I was amused the other day. I've started to go back to Panera's sort of tentatively, and not many people are there. There used to be a group of these old guys who sat right at the front, and they'd start early in the morning as soon as it opened up. And they like to call themselves the real cup guys, because Panera's would give them real cups, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in your book, you mentioned in the diner, that he has a porcelain cup. And it just clicked on me. I thought, a little detail like that, you mention it in, you know, just in passing, it's not a big deal out of the whole book, but it sets the tone. I mean, immediately we understand what kind of a diner it is. We can see that porcelain cup. And it was so pleasant in those days before this pandemic when I would see all those old guys sitting there, and they were so proud that they were the real cup guys. They're not like you stupid millennials, you know, with your paper cups. And I feel sad now because they're not there. You know, they were all, I hope they all survived this, because now, of course, being elderly, and they all look like vets. So I think they were all veterans. They all had, you know, some kind of World War II hat on or something. And just pray that they survive this, and that in a few months they'll be back there. I don't know if Panera's will ever bring back porcelain cups now, because, you know, we're all going cuckoo. If I don't even put on my earphones, you know, something's going on in this world.
I do. I feel, you know, I have an 87-year-old mother, and, you know, I feel bad for her, and I feel bad for older people, and I feel bad for younger people. I still have a daughter in college and a son who's single and they just graduated from college. And, you know, it's really hard to find jobs because of everything going on. College experience has changed dramatically. You know, no sports, no football, no go-to classes. Everything's online. And then, you know, my mom, who's 87, you know, is still very mobile, and she'd get out and she'd go to Mass every day, and she had a balance class she went to, and everything just got kind of put on hold. And, you know, I feel really blessed, Joy, and you might feel the same way. I mean, I get to get up in the morning and I go into my office and I get to do what I love, which is to write books. And, you know, I hope that my books translate out to people, that it can bring them, you know, some of them joy and it lifts their spirits and get them out of the house a little bit, and so maybe send them to Russia and St. Petersburg and
exactly.
You know, give them an opportunity to get to escape reality for a while, you know?
Well, you know, it has been a joy to have you on the program. I want to just I'm not, I don't know, I hope it doesn't sound like, my name is Patsy. Okay. My name is Patsy with a Z. And it's easy to remember because there are not very many people who, well, as a matter of fact, I don't know anyone whose name is Patsy with a Z, P-A-T-Z-I.
It's not.
And just so you remember me, I will tell you that Jimmy Hoffa gave me that name, because when I was a baby, my father was a Teamster, and I used to sit on Jimmy Hoffa's lap, and he used to always say, Patsy. And he would say 2 bits, 4 bits, 6 bits, a dollar. If you don't give me a hug, I'm going to holler. And he'd always end it with Patsy. And so, well, that's, I insisted that my name had to have a Z in it. So, so that's an easy way to remember me. Okay.
Wow. That's an amazing story. That is a truly amazing story, and
wonderful. And I will tell you something. He smelled nice. He was so sweet. He was really the sweetest guy you can imagine. So it's not at all what they depict in the movies. He wasn't like that.
Yeah, not like Al Pacino portrayed.
Oh my gosh! No. First of all, Jimmy was born on Valentine's Day in the Midwest. He's not a New Yorker, believe me. There was nothing New York about him. He was sort of soft and sweet and smelled so good. He used to give me half dollars, which I still have. So, okay, that's just a little bit of history.
Wow.
Since you like history and you like research, I thought I'd throw that in. Anyway, it's just been
a
joy to talk to you. And everybody, get this book. You need a good read. You need to go to Moscow and have some fun, you know. And the name of the book is The Last Agent. And once you read this, it's a standalone. You don't have to have read the first book in the series, the new wonderful series. But they should. I'll tell them they should read all of your books, because my goodness, Robert Degagné, how many books do you have?
I think there's about 20 now. Well, I think I'm at about 20 books that are
You're doing pretty well. And if we find a castle, we're going to crown you king of spy thrillers. How about that?
I love it.
And
Thank you very much.
Patsy with a Z. I will bring my sword. I have a sword, actually. And I will bring it. Okay?
And you can knight me.
Okay, I will. Absolutely. Okay. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Isn't he nice? He's nice. I like him. Oh, my goodness. Back in Moscow. Is she on? And now, this is really exciting day. I'm having such a wonderful day. Now, my goodness, I'm holding up this book, and it weighs a ton. And I am going to be talking to Susan Tyler Hitchcock. Hi, Susan.
Hi there.
Wow.
You know, our publisher calls this a stocking stuffer, but I don't know. You'd have to have a really big stocking to stuff that one in it.
I'm telling you, you know, I'm also on YouTube, and I'm holding it up, and it's nice. I can use this for exercise. Yo, boop, boop. Whoa, this is like...
That means you need two, right?
Yeah. Oh, and you do... This book, of course, one of the reasons is that you... It's National Geographic, and National Geographic uses the best paper. And this book is the Almanac of 2021. My goodness, can you believe it? 2021 is coming up.
Yeah.
And the paper is so good. And this is a kind of book that lasts forever. I mean, I know I have Nat Geo, the yellow magazine from way back when in the 50s, when, you know, they used to, my father got them starting, I think, after World War II. They last forever. And you never want to give them up. The problem is you actually have to buy two because you will want to give. It's so exciting. This book is so exciting. You want to say, oh, I want to share this. I really want to show. And then you think, I'm not giving this book away. Nothing. Nothing's going to let me give this book away. It's good.
Well, thank you.
So tell us, Susan, a little bit about yourself before I just rave about this book so much. Because, I mean, you actually get paid to do this book. Is it true? Nat Geo pays you money?
I have the best job in the world, I think. I have the job I was supposed to have when I grow up.
Oh, exactly. And I think I always do this. Joel Sartori, you know, has been on the program many times, and I've always said, well, I don't think they should pay you. I mean, you're having too much fun. You know, that you should pay them.
You know, Joel and I work together on his books as well, and he is just one of my very favorites. He is such a sweetheart and such an artist and such a contributor to our world and our picture of our world.
Oh, he's a delight. I just love him, and my listeners love him because he's just such a great guy, and of course his photography is so incredible. It's just it's amazing. Now, what's your exact title? What do they call you? The big boss? I don't know what they call you.
No, I'm not the big boss. I'm senior editor.
Senior editor.
So I have celebrated my 13th year as a full-time editor, and I had been a freelancer as a writer and editor for National Geographic a few years before that. And so I've been around there not as long as some of the other people I work with, but pretty long at this point. My special area is science books and health and nature. So that means that I'm responsible. I oversee the creation of, for example, our birding field guides and our space books. And the Almanac is a way to sort of pull all of that into one. It's just got a little bit of everything that National Geographic does.
Oh, it is so wonderful. Well, it has, of course, it has Joel's wonderful, wonderful photo arc, some photos from there. I can't decide which one. You can't have a favorite because there's so many. I love the wildflowers because when I was a little girl, I grew up in northern Michigan, and we had so many wonderful wildflowers. And my mother and father would not allow us to pick wildflowers. Those wildflowers were God's gift to butterflies. That's what we were told, and we could not pick a wildflower. So I love
one
that.
One of my favorites, similar to the wildflower pages, is the pages 206, 207, if you're looking at the book.
I know, the caterpillars. Don't tell me. Don't tell. You know that. Now, why did you say that? Because that's exactly where the page that I was on. 206 to 207.
Yeah, so on one side, on the left-hand page, you have 16 different caterpillars illustrated, and then on the right-hand page, you have photographs of 16 different butterflies and moths. And you match up the butterfly to the moth. I love this.
It is beautiful. Do you sell that as a chart, as a poster?
Well, we never have.
Well, you should. You should do this as a poster. I would buy it in an instant. I would love to have it up on my wall because, again,
yeah, I could see that.
Going along with the butterflies, you know, being in northern Michigan, I'm a Youper, and we live just off of Lake Superior. We look forward to, well, my... First of all, we looked forward to robins. When robins came, my mother, I think it was the happiest day of the year for my mother because we knew spring was coming. And and we loved, of course, the monarch butterfly. And the wonderful thing about it is one time when we had a neighborhood baseball team, and I remember one time my mother gave a lecture to the team. She didn't specifically say boys, but she mentioned something to the effect that don't you ever hurt a caterpillar because one day they are going to turn into, you know, butterflies. And she explained, you know, because we all love butterflies. And so she just sort of squeezed her eyes a little and sort of glared at the boys a little bit because I think those were the ones who would probably mess with those caterpillars. So so that's why I would just love that chart. I would love that to be a chart. I'd put it up on the wall. It'd remind me every day of my mother and how she knew that, you know, you have to make sure that kids understand that, you know, they're not bugs. You know, they turn into this beautiful thing. When you look at it, I couldn't decide which one I love the most. The Io moth. Wow, isn't it amazing? With it opens its two big eyes.
I have to say my favorite is the lunar moth.
Yes.
When you see those, they're so graceful and lovely.
So, you know, it's funny you picked that page because that's a page that I had been thinking about. There are so many pages in this book. I just love everything. I love the inside cheese one because my son likes cheese.
Isn't that interesting?
Well,
it's actually you get the microscopic picture of the particular mold that makes that specific cheese. Each great cheese has its own specific mold. I love that one, too.
You know, when my kids were young, we took them to Paris, and my older son was, he's about 11 or 12. And so we walked into this cheese. Have you ever been to Paris to a cheese store? Where they just sell cheese, nothing but cheese.
And
of course, the smell is overwhelming because the French like smelly cheese. So my older son, they give samples. And of course, recognized that we were Americans. I'm sure they were already laughing, like, they're not going to like this cheese. My older son, who spoke a little bit of French already, just fell in love with the smelly cheese. The smellier the cheese that they gave him, the more he loved it. And they were so thrilled. And so I'm looking at this cheese one, and I'm thinking, yeah, this is what made it stinky.
Well, so take a look at this fact on that page, and the book is full of little facts like this. The strong smell of Limburger cheese comes from Bifidobacterium linens, which is one of the bacteria that is also responsible for body and foot odor.
Yeah. we made sure that my son did not bring back any of the smelly cheese on the airplane.
No, that would not be good in your suitcase.
Not good. I don't know. Where can we start? I love the timelines. Those are beautifully done. I love timelines.
Yeah, the timelines are something that we do carry from one edition, one year to the next. Although we usually do a little bit of updating at the very end of the timeline when things have happened recently that need to be added. But we have a timeline for every chapter, and they're illustrated. So I'm looking right now at the U.S. history, and it goes from 1587, and it has a drawing of Roanoke Island, all the way up to 2008, Barack Obama's election. We don't come up to the present day because you never quite know is going to be history that's happening right now, although I think we could guess. But that's another interesting thing to mention, that we actually were in the midst of going to the printer with this book when we realized we really have to have something about coronavirus in this book. We hadn't planned on it, but because we were working on it in the fall of last year, before anyone even thought about that. But at the very last minute, we pulled four pages at the front of the book, and we created four pages of information on the coronavirus, so that, in fact, the 2021 Almanac speaks to that newsworthy topic.
Yeah, wow, that was a last minute thing. But of course, you pulled it off, and NetGeo pulls this off. Something, you know, it's just what you guys put together. There was one animal that I had never heard of that I really loved. It's on page 180. It's that quoll.
Quoll.
Isn't that nice?
Yes. Isn't it sweet?
Oh, it's adorable.
Yeah. Very interesting stories about the quoll. It's an Australian animal that actually ended up going to Tasmania, the island off of Australia. Now there's all kinds of work being done to figure out how to keep this animal alive, because it really is quite endangered. But it's a sweetheart, isn't it?
Oh, adorable. You look at that thing and you say, oh my gosh, it's so adorable. It's And there's, as you said, there's so many different sections in this book. I love the one about sleep. I found that so fascinating, and that picture of the orchestra playing and
very
people sleeping.
Interesting information about sleep, and also about the influence of different kinds of light on your sleep. That's an example of how we actually try to use not only words but pictures to tell the story. We have a graphic of that represents the concept of biorhythms in a way, and around the clock, what's happening in your brain that makes you awake or asleep at different parts of the day and night.
Well, everything. It's hard to thumb through it. Oh, I love the moon one too, because now we're talking about sending the first woman to the moon, and I'm trying to pick out where's she going to land. I want to know.
There you go. Yeah, we have a map of both the near and the far side of the moon. I've been told by every astronomy expert that I work with, say you don't call it the dark side of the moon. The only reason it's dark is because we don't see it. It is just as brightly lit by the sun as the part that we see. But we have maps of both sides of the moon. We also have a map of Mars in this book. Trying to keep up with the geography of other planets. We have a section also on the moons of other planets, which are very fascinating, and a couple of them are the most likely places in our solar system that we might find other life, although they've sort of been bumped off the list by Venus recently, which happened after this book came out. So it'll be in next year's book. Maybe we'll have a whole feature on it.
And I little Pluto is not on that big one.
I know. Poor Pluto.
I felt bad for Pluto. I don't like it being called a former planet. To me, it's a planet. I remember as a girl, learning them in order, and M, J, Sun. It's M, Vem, J, Sun, P. Yeah, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, P. It's for Pluto. And so I learned it that way. I learned it M, Vem, J, Sun, P. And I could do that when I was, 4 years old, I think. And I taught it to my kids. And they could do it when they were 4 years old. And if we could I would go around saying MVM Jason P, and so they knew it. And now we don't have the P at the end. I can't take it. That's too much of a change for me. So,
well, we do feature Pluto on the
next page.
It's titled Dwarf Planet,
and it gets its own little picture, which maybe makes it happy, but I still think,
Yeah.
Oh, I also like the thing about lithium, because people know now about lithium so much, and who knew where it was?
Right, exactly. I mean, the other thing is that's so interesting about it is that it's one of the original elements in the evolution of planet Earth. There was hydrogen, helium, and lithium were some of the three most ancient elements of Earth. And so we do have a map here that shows where it's coming from and how it's mined, and we hear about it more and more because it's being used in batteries, but I didn't know half as much as I do know now.
Oh yeah, I didn't know all those details either. So I love that. This is what's so everybody really. This is such a wonderful book. I think I told Joel last time, I said, I believe, and this is, I'm going to tell you, because you can bring it to your bosses. I'm going to repeat that it was my suggestion, I think last year, that Nat Geo should make Thanksgiving a Nat Geo gift day. It is a day when you go to visit people. And I hope that this year we can visit people by Thanksgiving. If you want to bring a gift, instead of a wine and flowers, because they probably have the wine they want already for the turkey, they already have flowers in, you know, centerpieces. I think the perfect gift, and they really should do a I'm telling you, talk to your bosses. Tell them, do a television advertisement. I will be happy to be on it if they want, but they should definitely put you and Joel and all of you other wonderful Nat Geo people and say, and you can all hold up your books and say, when you're visiting family and friends this year at Thanksgiving, here's something that they will be thankful for forever. They will keep this book. It should be a major television commercial, and they still have time to get it done before Thanksgiving. Nat Geo is a Thanksgiving Day book. It is a book that the reason is when you give somebody a Nat Geo book, they're going to keep it. You never see them in garage sales. People hold on to them. They're quality. They last. Nat Geo's been around for so many years, over 100 years, and you have produced quality books that people love. Mm. And that weigh a ton. I mean, I'm just trying to lift it again. And it really should be an advertisement. You never advertise on television. You never advertise that it is a gift book for a particular time, although every holiday, every birthday, people should be giving Nat Geo books. But if you made it sort of national Thanksgiving Nat Geo, maybe give a discount if people buy Nat Geo books for Thanksgiving, and it would really, I think, take off as an idea. Because I know when people come to my house for Thanksgiving, I'm always the one who does the Thanksgiving. And they do. They bring me chocolates and candy and flowers and extra wine. And sometimes I still have some of the bottles of wine people have brought me because I've never used it. But if they had given me a Nat Geo book, which they don't have to give me now because you guys give me so many and I really appreciate it. But if they had given me a Nat Geo book, it would be right there, center stage in my living room, as so many of them are, because I have a big coffee table and it's filled with Nat Geo books. So,
oh, lovely. I'm glad to hear that.
And you know what? Good. If you take this, and I'm telling you, if you take this to your bosses, maybe they'll give you, punch you up another level. You'll become a VP of smart ideas at Nat Geo.
Oh. Well.
How about that?
I don't know about that, but I like your idea, though. I will definitely share it.
Well, I think you are wonderful. You're delightful. I'm so glad that we were really on the same page, as it were, when it comes to the wonderful, wonderful caterpillar butterfly pages. And I hope that you also take my suggestion and have them make a poster of it. And I think it would be a big, big seller. So, in addition to being a radio host, I am also here running a real, publicity campaign for Nat Geo. So, Susan Tyler Hitchcock, Susan Tyler Hitchcock, you are right now a senior editor, and maybe we'll make you a VP of smart ideas there at Nat Geo. Because you are delightful, and I think it's so much fun. And everybody, what's the webpage so people can find Nat Geo? Make it real easy for them.
Well, nationalgeographic.com is the online website. But to buy National Geographic Almanac 2021, go to any of your online booksellers or to your neighborhood bookstore.
If they're open.
Today is our publication date. It's available now.
It's available now. People do it. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. As I said, buy two. You will want to give one to somebody you love, but you're going to keep one for yourself and send them out as gifts and think about Thanksgiving. And I think, Susan, you're delightful. Say hi to Joel for me because I love him. I think he's so great. And I am telling, although I think that all of you don't really need to get paid because you're doing... You're having just fun all day. I mean, really, really fun. But I do hope they give you a raise when you come to them with a good idea on Nat Geo Thanksgiving Day advertising. Okay?
Great.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now,
all right,
Susan.
Good to talk.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Oh, she's cute. Oh, she's nice. I like her. All right. What a book. Oh, what a book. I'm telling you, it weighs a ton. What are they? It's like they printed on steel or something. Wow, what a book. It's beautiful, just beautiful. And again, you can't go wrong if you give a Nat Geo book. And this 2021 almanac, really, it hurt my wrist. Look at this. I have to lift it with two arms because it's such a big, heavy book and really fantastic. And I love Nat Geo books. So, and I'm going to have some more Nat Geo books for kids that are perfect for Christmas time gifts. So, what a day! Definitely, I want to go back just a minute to talk about Robert Dugoni. This book reminded me of so many wonderful things. I don't know if I can say this word on radio. Oh, anyway, one, because I get to go back here with to Russia and to all of the memories I have of that. It's a really, really fun book to read. So I hope that you'll think about getting Robert Dugoni's latest book. And it's lots of fun, and it's called The Last Agent. And my goodness, what's Putin up to again? It's making me crazy. What do I want to say? Oh, yes, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson is going to be on the program, I think, on Thursday. I hope Thursday. I would like, everything is, up in the air. But I think he's going to be this Thursday. And or next Thursday, but he's going to be on. And if you have a question, a legal question,